If you remember, we are studying the Gospel of John. It's loud. I hope you enjoyed last week's class. I'm looking forward to the entire quarter. But have you ever been anywhere where all of a sudden the lights went out? It gets a little dark, doesn't it? And usually you're sitting there and maybe you're on your sofa and the power goes off. And you think, there's a flashlight. Where is my flashlight, right? And, oh, I remember, it's in the kitchen in the right-hand side drawer. I walk by it every day. And so you start to get up and you start to wander through your house, and the next thing you know, wait a minute, I didn't know the sofa was right there. Don't you live with where the sofa is? Why don't you know where the sofa is? It seems like all of a sudden everything is so alien because you're in darkness, right? So you finally make it to the kitchen and lo and behold, you find the flashlight. How much better does it feel when you find the flashlight? And I'm going to be good. I'm not going to shine it in your eyes. But doesn't everything feel so much better when you finally locate that flashlight? You can see again. That sofa that you thought moved 5 minutes ago and tripped you didn't move. It's exactly where you left it. The ottoman and the coffee table are right where they belong. And now you can go around and you can see everywhere. Oh, it's neat everywhere. Yes, you can. We feel so comfortable when we get back into the light, don't we? But why does this work? I mean, why does this little tiny flashlight work? Well, it's because of what God did on day one. You see, at the very, very beginning, the very first thing that God did was he created light. And in Genesis it says, then God said, let there be light, and there was light. Now, I think it's interesting. I'm actually shining a black slide onto the screen. But you can see a big rectangle, can't you? Light is so powerful. On that very first day, God created such power with light that even just shining a dim light defeats the darkness. He said, let there be light, and there was light. And he saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. That word separated means that he divided the light from the dark. Now, if you remember the creation account, he hasn't made anything that shines yet. He hasn't made the sun. He hasn't made the moon. He hasn't put the stars in the sky. He simply created light. And he gave light power over darkness. He gave it all of the properties it needed to win all the time. And so these little lights, these flashlights, the lights shining on the wall, start to illuminate things. I can actually turn this flashlight off now. Why? Because just the light that I'm shining on the wall is enough. I'm starting to be able to see your faces. Have you noticed our eyes adapt after a while? We're able to see fainter and fainter light. And so God, at the very first thing he did, he gave light all the power. You won't turn on this flashlight and see the light show up, but not repel the darkness. I can look under the pews. Oh, kids have been there. You can look into a closet. You can look under your car. You can look anywhere in any place that's dark. If you shine a light in that place, it always repels the darkness. That's exactly the way God set it up. That's exactly the way he designed it. I think this is interesting too. Doesn't matter how small the light is, does it? A very small light is still clearly visible in the dark. And as a matter of fact, the darker it is, the easier it is to see that small light. We see that even in our cities, if you climb up Lookout Mountain, for example, you see this great view of the city lights, right? Those lights are miles and miles away. And yet you can see them so clearly from a distance. Why? Because of what God did on day one. I find this very interesting. This is actually a photograph from space of the United States. And what do you notice? You can clearly see the entire outline of the U.S. because the light wins every single time. And if you notice, Denver is right about there. And it shows it pretty clearly. Even my laser pointer is easy to follow wherever I go. Even though it's so dark in here, light always wins. And even when we look at the stars, which God finally made and placed in the sky, that are millions, sometimes billions of miles away, and yet their light is visible, even though it crosses that expanse of millions and millions of miles of darkness, the light reaches us. And the longer you stare into the night sky, the more stars you see, right? Once you sit for about a half an hour, scientists tell us, our pupils open up to the point where we can see all the faint light and you see all the stars. Have any of you been camping in Colorado and you can actually see satellites that track across the sky? Isn't that cool? Well, I think I've made my point. Light wins. No matter how small, it always wins. And it will never lose because of what God did. Let's go ahead and turn on the light so people don't fall asleep on me. I don't want you sleeping in class. But light always wins. Every single time, every single situation, the light is going to win. Now, we even turned up the lights, but you can still see my dots, can't you? And they're always going to be there. As long as the light shines, you're always going to be able to see it. And so, what does this have to do with what we were talking about? Well, the word light is actually a key word in the Gospel of John. Throughout the whole of the New Testament, the word light is used 72 times. Over half of those occurrences are found in John's writings. Between the Gospel of John, 1 John, and the book of Revelation, more than half of the occurrences of the word light appear in his writings. And if you remember, we talked about John's purpose for writing. Where do we find John's purpose for writing? Chapter 20, verse 30 and 31, right? Says, many other signs Jesus performed in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but these have been written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. And we talked last week about some very special statements that Jesus makes throughout the book. We talked about this Greek phrase, ego eimi, right? Which was Jesus' way of associating himself with Jehovah God. When he used that term, the Jews understood exactly what he meant, to the point where they picked up stones and they were ready to stone him because he claimed to be equal with God. He claimed to be God, the I am of the burning bush. And so we see that one of the phrases that we're going to look at tonight, we're going to look at these I am statements throughout, but one of the ones that we're going to look at tonight is associated with light. John actually begins his gospel, you remember we looked last week, by presenting a number of witnesses throughout the first 6 or 7 chapters of the book. We're not going to go back over those tonight, but look in John chapter 1. John begins in verse 4 by saying, in him was life, and the life was the light of men. That's the first time we have our key word for tonight, light, showing up. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. Now, unfortunately, this phrase, the light did not comprehend it, it's kind of hard for us to comprehend. And actually, a better translation of this word here would be, did not overpower it. Did not win over it. So the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overpower it. Well, why not? Because of what God did on day one. You see, light always wins. Light is always going to repel the darkness. And Jesus, as the light, is coming into the world. And John makes the bold statement that it shines in the darkness. And the darkness did not comprehend it, did not overpower it. And he goes on down through verse 6. There came a man sent from God whose name was John, and he came as a witness to testify about the light, so that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but he came to testify about the light. There was the true light, which coming into the world enlightens every man. You see, the light of Jesus Christ enlightens every man. By coming into the world, he provided enlightenment. And so John is actually accomplishing what he set out to accomplish in this gospel. He was giving us evidence that Jesus was who he said he was, that he was the Son of God. And so we can see these signs and wonders he performed. We can see the testimony of these eyewitnesses, and we can understand that Jesus is the Christ. But where we really want to deal with tonight is we want to start in chapter, we want to look at a statement that Jesus makes in chapter 8. But before he does that, throughout the Old Testament, this concept of light was associated with things like wisdom, and it was associated with things like guidance. Psalm chapter 119, verse 105 says, "Thy word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path." They associated light with this idea of guidance. God gave us guidance through light. And in Ecclesiastes, it's associated with the concept of wisdom. And so when we get to the New Testament, all of these concepts of light all start to come together in the embodiment of Jesus Christ. They all start to converge. But one of the things that was happening while Jesus was here and while he was teaching was confusion kind of started to arise. There were those that were witnessing what he was doing. They saw the testimony of these eyewitnesses. They saw the miracles that he was performing. And many started to believe and follow him. They saw the light. But there was a problem. The religious leaders of their day were saying, "No, that's not who you think it is. He's a fraud. He's not the Christ. We know he's not the Christ." And so you have the lights, the spiritual lights of their culture, the religious leaders telling them one thing. What they see, we're seeing another. And so they become confused. Look at chapter 7. In chapter 7, verse 41, actually starting in verse 40, it says, "Some of the people, therefore, when they heard these words, were saying, 'This certainly is the prophet.' Others were saying, 'This is the Christ.' And still others were saying, 'Surely the Christ is not going to come from Galilee, is he?'" So they have this confusion. They're not sure what's happening. And to make things worse, there's a whole nother group that, while some are believing and following, some want to kill him. It's interesting to me that four times in chapter 7 of the Gospel of John, it's recorded that there was a plot against Jesus to kill him. If you look in chapter 7, verse 19, "Did not Moses give you the law? And yet none of you carries on the law. Why do you seek to kill me?" And then you see another one in verse 25. "So some of the people of Jerusalem were saying, 'Is this not the man whom they are seeking to kill?' And then you see it again in verse 30. "So they were seeking to seize him, and no man laid his hands on him because his hour had not yet come." They were trying to seize him so they could kill him. And then in verse 32 says, "The Pharisees heard the crowd muttering the things about him, and the chief priests and the Pharisees sent the officers to seize him." So some people are saying, "This is the Christ." Some people are saying, "We got to kill this guy." They were wandering in darkness. Their confusion, what do I do? Who do I follow? How do I know whether what I'm seeing is true? How do I know what to do spiritually? And so in chapter 8, in the midst of this confusion, in verse 12, you have Jesus making the I am statement that we want to deal with tonight. It says, "Then Jesus again spoke to them, saying, 'I am the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in the darkness, but will have the light of life. I am the light of the world. That's ego me. This is one of those statements where he's saying, I am Jehovah God. I am, as Jehovah God, the light of the world. And he who follows me will not walk in darkness. Well, if he really is God, and you follow him, and he's the light, there is no way to walk in darkness, is there? Light always wins. It was set up that way from the beginning. He promises that the darkness, the confusion that they're walking in, can be removed if you'll simply follow the light. And he's come into the world to be that light. In chapter 1, you remember John said, the true light which coming into the world enlightens every man. And so being this I am, the light of the world, Jesus claims that he is that true light that John mentioned in the prologue. Now, one of the interesting things that you're going to see about these ego me statements throughout this study is that all of them are in some way connected to the prologue of this book. The first 18 verses of this book, all of these I am statements have roots going all the way back to the beginning. Certainly, we see that with the light statement because there's so many occurrences of the word light in the beginning. But notice that Jesus claims to be the light, not just a light. The word light occurs, as I mentioned, here in the gospel 24 times. 21 of those times, it's preceded by the word the. He's not just talking about Jesus is a light of the world. He's talking about Jesus is the light. I am the light, the only true light that has come into the world. You see, their religious leaders were claiming to guide them. Their religious leaders in some form or another were claiming to be spiritual lights for them. But they were leading them in the wrong direction. They weren't true lights. And so this statement has so much power in it. Because he's saying, I am the one that you can follow. I am the one that will repel the darkness. I am the one that can shine the light into the dark places. And if you will follow me, you will not walk in darkness. So if all roads lead to James. I just finished teaching James on Monday night, so I still have James on the brain. If John's purpose for writing is to prove that Jesus is the Christ, right? We know that from his purpose statement in John chapter 20. And here we have John recording that Jesus says that he is the light of the world. What would you now expect John to do? What do you think? Prove it, right? He's not just going to let this go by, is he? I mean, he's just going to say, Jesus said he was the light of the world. That's it. Move on to the next point, right? No, he said that he wrote these things. Because there were a lot of other things that Jesus did in the presence of the disciples that weren't recorded in this book. But these were written that we might know, right? So how does he prove it? I mean, how are you really going to prove that Jesus really is the light of the world? Well, look at chapter 9. Now, do you remember when I turned the lights out? It was only a little unsettling, right? I mean, to be honest with you, the light from my Mac in the back was making a big glow, and the light from the foyer was shining, and you could see light through this doorway. So we really didn't get it that dark in here, did we? Anybody ever been down in a cave? One of those really deep ones, and they turn the lights out. And they turn the lights out, and you go like this. And it's like, okay, there's no hand there. You cannot see anything. And no matter how long you stay down in that cave, no matter how long you allow your eyes to adapt to that light, guess what? You aren't going to be able to see a thing. Well, in John chapter 9, we talk about a man who is born blind. Can you imagine that kind of darkness? He was born without his sight. Now, I really, honestly cannot imagine what that's like. We can simulate it, right? As kids, did you ever put the blindfold on to try to pretend that you were blind or something to see what it was like? But what did you do? You're always looking underneath, right? I'm cheating. Or you close your eyes, but you ever do the hide and seek thing where you're closing your eyes, but you really have one just kind of open. Why? Because we don't want to walk around in the dark. This man lived in the dark. But it's interesting in verse 2, the disciples ask Jesus a question and they say, Rabbi, who sinned that this man, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he would be born blind? See, the Jewish mindset was that this man was blind because of some sinful condition. The spiritual lights of the day said, hey, if he's blind, it's because God's punishing him for something. It's either his sin or his parents' sin, but somebody sinned here in order for him to be blind. Now, imagine that for just a second. The spiritual leaders have cast him out, if you will. I mean, if they really believe that God struck him blind because of some sin in your life, how much help are they going to try to extend to this guy? Any? Zip. Zero. Nada. Because in their mindset, if they try to help him, who are they going against? They're going against God. God is punishing him, causing him to be blind because of some sin issue in his life. Well, who are we to step in and try to offer this man help if God is going to punish him? So not only does he have no sight, but he's an outcast in his own culture. He's relegated to sitting and begging. And so in verse 3, it says, Jesus answered, it was neither that this man sinned nor his parents, but it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me as long as it is day, because night is coming when no one can work. And he says, I am the light of the world. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Now, it's interesting. This looks like the same statement that he's already made, but he's not using ego e me here. He's already made that statement in chapter 8. But he is making the same claim that while he's in the world, he is the light. And so we see in verse 6, when he said this, he spat on the ground and made clay out of the spittle and applied the clay to his eyes. And he said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent. And so he went away, washed, and came back seeing. He cured a man that had been born blind. Can you imagine? We talked about the relief we felt just when we turn on the flashlight, when the power goes out. Can you imagine? We don't know how old this man is. But I'm assuming that he's lived at least some significant length of his life. Maybe he's a late teenager. Maybe he's in his 20s or 30s. It could be much older than that. Can you imagine the relief for this man when the lights came on? We don't like it for 5 or 6 minutes. How about a whole lifetime? And all of a sudden, he meets the light of the world, and Jesus turns the lights on for this man. You see, Jesus proved the statement. Jesus proved that he was the light of the world. He was able to cure this man's blindness. Now, I find it also interesting that he says, while I am in the world, I am the light of the world. You see, while Jesus came to this earth, he shone his light, the light of truth. He was there for people to recognize as the Messiah, the I Am, Jehovah God in the flesh, walking around. And he was proving that through the signs and wonders that he was doing. But the people didn't always recognize him. They didn't always look to see what they were looking at. Some of them saw him as a challenge. They wanted to stay in the darkness. How sad. If you found the flashlight finally, would you not want to turn it on? Would you want to keep stumbling around in the dark and breaking your shins on the furniture when somebody's offered you the opportunity to see? See, that's in essence what was happening. Jesus came and said, I am the light. All you have to do is follow me. Believe in me. Follow me. I am who I say I am. This man is proof of that. Now, I find it really interesting that in chapter 9, verse 32, it tells us something interesting about this man being cured of his blindness. It says, since the beginning of time, it has never been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a person born blind. I mean, at first we think, okay, he cured a blind man. And that's not really that big a deal. But for these people, it had never been done before. See, that's testimony, is it not? In a court of law, he says, I am the light of the world, and I'm going to show you that I am the light of the world by doing something you've never seen done before. I'm going to cure a man that's been born blind. Well, is that all? I mean, he cures him and moves on. So he demonstrated that he was the light of the world simply by giving him his sight. Is there more to this than that? You see, Jesus is the light of the world, and while he cured the blind man, he also gave him light. He allowed him to see. We talk about being able to see just looking around in the light, but Jesus here is also talking about the idea that when he enlightens the men, they get their spiritual sight too, do they not? When we read the rest of the account in chapter 9, this blind man follows Jesus. He becomes a disciple. But he also becomes a stumbling block for those that are around him. There are still those that refuse the evidence. They've seen the proof, have they not, at this point? I mean, if we just took this one example, do we really need more proof? If somebody could come in and do what happened right here, do we really need more proof that Jesus is the I am? No. But there are still those that challenged. There were some that even said, I don't think that's that guy. Right? If you remember the account, people say, that's the guy that used to be blind. He was begging at the gate. And they said, no, it just looks like him. No, it's the same guy. And he's now able to see. And he becomes a disciple. He follows the Lord. But the Pharisees themselves were still rejecting God. They were still rejecting what Jesus had to offer them. And so we got to ask ourselves, we're not blind. We don't need that kind of light, do we? But we need spiritual sight. We need to recognize that as the I am, he can give us that spiritual sight. We don't have to walk in darkness. And the world that we live in is dark. It's a pretty dark place. And the further we get away from the light, the darker it becomes. Have you ever been camping and had a campfire? Where does it feel the best as far as being able to see and be comfortable? Close to the fire, where the light is. But the further you get away from the fire, the less you can see around your feet. You can still see the fire off in the distance. You can still see the light. But the space between where the light is and where you are is still very uncertain. And walking from here to there can be dangerous. And so the idea here is that through our belief, through walking with him, we can be close to the light. We can see and have our spiritual sight. We can follow. And so as we look at this example, as we look at Jesus' demonstration that he is the light of the world, we see three major characteristics of Jesus that come out to us. And they show up very strongly. First, the I am, Jehovah God, has power over darkness. Not just physical darkness, but spiritual darkness. In John chapter 1, verse 5, he said, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overpower it. Well, the darkness of the man's blindness could not overpower Jesus, right? He was too strong for that. But could he overpower the Pharisees and their doubts? Did he overpower the Pharisees in their doubts? No, they remained in darkness, but not because of Jesus' work, because of our own. It was their refusal to accept the light, to follow the light, to walk from here to the campfire. And so we learn that while darkness is always repelled by the light, that light has power over darkness. It's up to us individually to accept that. To move toward the light. We can be the blind man or we can be the Pharisees. But bottom line is light is always going to win. Well, we also see in John chapter 12, if you turn over to John chapter 12, verses 34, or 35 and 36. He says, walk while you have the light, so that the darkness will not overtake you. You know, you got the campfire, you got the flashlight in your pocket. I turn the light on, what am I going to use it for? I'm going to walk while I have the light. Why? Because he's going to show me the way. He's going to make sure I safely arrive. And so while I have the light, I'm going to walk. I'm going to use that light to guide my path. I'm going to let it steer me. It's going to steer me around the rocks and the crevices, the things I can trip on, the things I can stumble over. And so just like they were, while you have the light, we need to recognize. Now, it's interesting, he says, so that the dark will not overtake you. As long as you have the light, darkness cannot overtake you. If we sit in this room with the lights on, darkness cannot invade this room. The lights won't stay on and darkness will come, right? The only way that darkness is going to win in this room is if these lights go out. Yes? Which is the same word? Overtake is the same word for comprehend. I didn't look at that. Thank you very much, Mr. Petrillo. So that's the idea of this overtake. In John chapter 1, verse 5, when it says the darkness did not comprehend it, it didn't overtake it. And so now here in chapter 12, he's making the exact same point. Walk while you have the light, so the darkness will not overtake you. As long as you have light, darkness will never win. And then in verse 46 of John chapter 12, he says, everyone who believes in the light will not remain in darkness. Everyone. You see, again, light always wins. If you follow the light, if you believe in Jesus as the light, and we're not going to get into what believe means in here. We're going to do that throughout the course of the quarter. But believe is not just a passive acknowledgement that he is the light. It's an active pursuit, right? It's a verb in the Gospel of John. He who believes, he who lives that life that demonstrates belief in the light, will not remain in darkness. Why? Because darkness is always defeated by the light. So the I am Jehovah God always has the power over darkness. Well, the second thing that we see, the second characteristic that we see of the I am of Jesus is that he has the power to separate. You remember back in Genesis, God separated the light from the dark. He made a division. And we see Jesus do the same thing. You know, so many times today we're hearing the cry throughout the church, unity at all costs, right? Well, they didn't pay attention to Jesus's teaching, because everywhere that Jesus went, especially here in the Gospel of John, you see that division followed Jesus wherever he went. Now, it wasn't because he chose to divide people, but light does that. It separates itself from darkness. The two cannot be in the same place at the same time. It's not possible. If I am dark and I turn on the light, light wins. It's not still dark and light at the same time. And so light has the power to divide. Notice some passages in chapter 7, verse 43. And so a division occurred in the crowd because of him. And then look at chapter 9, verse 16. Therefore, some of the Pharisees were saying, this man is not from God because he does not keep the Sabbath. But others were saying, how can a man who is a sinner perform such signs? And there was a division among them. And then you have chapter 10, verse 19. After Jesus speaks to them about his relationship with the Father and makes the point that he's the good shepherd. We're not going to go there yet. We'll deal with that one later. But in verse 19, it says, a division occurred again among the Jews because of these words. You see, simply by being the light, Jesus causes a division. Because if we want to stay in darkness, we can't be in the light where he is. If we want to stay walking in the dark, that's where we'll stay. There's no middle ground. There's no semi-light. We either are walking in darkness or we're walking in the light. We see that in the discussion with the Pharisees. If you look in chapter 9, verses 39 to 41, that was their problem. They had seen the man that had been cured. And in verse 39, it says, "And Jesus said, 'For judgment I came into this world, so that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind.' And those of the Pharisees who were with him heard these things and said to him, 'We are not blind too, are we?' And Jesus said to them, 'If you were blind, you would have no sin. But since you say, "We see," your sin remains.'" You see, they claim to be seers. They claim to be lights. They claim to be the spiritual leaders of their day, and yet they continue to walk in darkness and they stay in darkness. And so the judgment against them is that they will not confess him before men. They refuse to accept his authority. In 3:19, we get this idea of the judgment that Jesus brings and the reason he causes division. And it's really a powerful thought. It's very simple. It's not complicated, but in John chapter 3, verse 19, he says, "This is the judgment, that the light has come into the world, and men love the darkness rather than the light, for their deeds were evil." Notice there's two parts to this judgment. The first part is that the light has come into the world. You see, Jesus coming into the world has shown truth. He's shown the right way. That is undeniable now. There was a time when we could say, we don't know the light. We haven't seen the light. We haven't been shown the right way. But that's no longer an excuse we can use. The judgment is that the light has come into the world. That fact is undeniable. But the second part is the important one for us. And men loved the darkness rather than the light. Have you ever noticed that bars are dark? You know, those kinds of places where shady things go on sometimes are always dark. I grew up in, my father was an alcoholic, and I hate to admit it, but he took me to bars as a teenager. And I always noticed that in Arizona, it was really bright outside, and we'd go to this building, and we'd go inside, and it was dark, like midnight inside. Why is that? Because, see, we like the dark when we're doing those things that we know we shouldn't be doing. We like the hiddenness of it. We like the ability to hide in the dark. People can't quite see us, and so we think nobody knows what we're doing. See, that's what he's saying here. The men loved the darkness rather than the light, for their deeds were evil. The things that they were doing, they did not want exposed. And we see that in the next verse, in verse 20. He says, "For everyone who does evil hates the light and does not come to the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed." We certainly don't want our fears, our deeds exposed. We're afraid of that. And so we hide in the darkness. But that was causing these people to stay away from Jesus. They were happy. They loved doing what they were doing in the dark. And so they rejected the Christ. That's the judgment that has come into the world, folks. And it's the same judgment for you and I. The light has come into the world. We have truth revealed to us. We have to choose. Just like the blind man had to choose, just like the Pharisees had to choose, we have to choose whether we want to walk in the light or remain in the darkness. It's our choice. But we know what? Light always wins, does it not? The light is always going to be victorious over the darkness if we'll go to it, if we'll trust in him, if we'll accept Jesus as the I am Jehovah God and respond to him as Lord of our lives. We can get rid of the darkness that's in our life, no matter how dark it seems. Remember my little pinprick of light? That little tiny light wins. And so we just have to be willing to go to the light. Don't fear that our deeds will be exposed, but move toward that light. Well, finally, the last thing that we see, the last characteristics of the I Am that we see in this section is light has the power to enlighten and illumine. Again, we go back to John chapter 1, verse 9. It says, the true light coming into the world enlightens every man. And so it's not just that he is the light, but the light came for a purpose. And in John chapter 12, verses 44 and 46, we see the purpose for this light coming. It illumines, it enlightens us about something very powerful. And starting in verse 44, Jesus says, he who believes in me does not believe in me, but in him who sent me. And he who sees me sees the one who sent me. I have come as light into the world so that everyone who believes in me will not remain in darkness. Again, he makes the claim that light will always win, and we know that to be true. But notice the claim that he makes. The true light's purpose is to reveal what? The Father. And he says, he who believes in me does not believe in me, but in him who sent me. How is that possible? Because they're one and the same. He is the Jehovah God. He is God incarnate here on this earth. And so if we see Jesus, we see the Father. Notice he says, he who sees me sees the one who sent me. We see the light of Jehovah by the things that Jesus did because he is Jehovah God. He is the God of creation walking around on the earth. Again, the blind man had that sight given to him. He was made to see, but it was his spiritual eyes that were opened. In 9:35 to 38, we see that this man responded to that salvation. He responded to that message of Jesus and followed. Well, we're kind of running out of time. So what does this all mean to us? I mean, what are we supposed to do about this? Well, as the I Am, as the Jehovah God, as the true light of the world, how are we to respond? Well, we're simply faced with the same decisions that they were. We can stay in our darkness. We can continue along the path that we set out to on and that we lived in this world. And it's dark. And it's lonely. And it's difficult. Remember what it was like with the lights off. But apply that to your spiritual life. Wandering around, stumbling for something to hold on to. How many times do we see in our culture today people searching for something that they can follow, something that's true, and they go from discipline to discipline and philosophy to philosophy, and what do they discover each and every time? That none of them are the true light. None of them fulfill, none of them repel that darkness that's in their life, but Jesus can do that. He can, by following him, by responding to him, he can get rid of the darkness that's in our lives. But John carries this concept beyond his gospel into his first epistle. And in 1 John chapter 1, verses 5 through 7, it's a passage that we're all very familiar with. But turn with me, I want you to read it in your own Bibles. 1 John chapter 1. He says, this is the message we have heard from him, Jesus, and announce to you that God is light. With all the attributes that we've talked about, God is light. He will always repel the darkness. He will always divide truth from untruth, from light from darkness. He will always illumine. He will always enlighten. God is light. And in him, there is no darkness at all. And now notice the choice again that we have. If we say that we have fellowship with him and yet walk in darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. Why? Because Jesus already said if we follow him, if we walk in that light, there will be no darkness. And so if we're walking in darkness, we have no fellowship with God. But if we walk in the light as he himself is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus, his son, cleanses us from all sin. It continues to cleanse us of all sin. That's the promise. That's the true light repelling all of the darkness all of the time. Well, I want to close with this one thought. You see the little light on the wall? That's really not the light. You see, the light is really in the projectors that are up here. That is a reflection of the light. You see, we are not the true lights that have come into the world. Jesus is that true light. But each one of us is a reflection of His truth, of His life. If we walk in this world as Christians, if we let our light shine, we are the reflection of the true light, which coming into the world enlightens all men. Let His light shine. Each day, commit yourself to letting His light shine out of you and illumine a dark world that we live in. And if you'll do that, guess what? I can promise, the light will always win. Okay? We'll look at the next I am statement next week. Thanks for joining us. Sorry, I went a little bit over.